6, D5, There Are No Clean Getaways. And that was actually the third choice, same movie, third tagline from that movie. And it was the only one that I thought, somebody might get it. But I'm going to go so far as to give you a hint. We are definitely going to be talking about a possible sequel to that movie later on. So in case you were giving me the blank stare through your iPod or, you know, MP3 player device, we're going to help you out a little bit later. Of course, we are referring to our tagline contest that when you figure out what movie we're talking about, send us an email to moviesonup@gmail.com.
Or you could tweet it at us at moviesonup. I always want to say the .com, but I forgot. Yeah, no, I always do that. Tweet it to us at moviesonup and follow us, because I'll open it up. That's a little more accessible.
Yeah, I guess that's fine, because either way, I don't see it. So it makes
either way, it's on me, so it's really whatever I want to do.
Yeah, however,
like Dave, Movies On Up on Facebook as well, and you can tell me there, too. So.
Yeah, again, I don't see that either. Maybe I will like us once I get a Facebook profile. One thing I do have is iTunes, and I can leave us an iTunes review if I were that kind of
egomaniac
to do. But I won't do it, but I would like you guys to do it. So please check us out on iTunes. Leave us a review. That does help us quite a bit in terms of actual iTunes. They do take a
Michael Kalinich left us one after the first episode. And yes. Now here we are 5 episodes in, and everybody else is slacking. One. Yeah, well, we still only have one.
Well, that's okay. It's a good review. So, I mean, I guess we're batting 1,000. Which is more than I can say for some movies that came out this week, did not quite bat 1,000.
Does that mean you want to talk about the box office?
Yeah.
I'm going to try to disrupt all your segues this week.
Yeah, but that one was just too good. You can't even throw that.
Box office this week, I believe last week, I don't remember exactly. I think I set the over-under on Snow White and the Huntsman at, I think, $37 million.
Tweet us at Movies On Up and let us know.
Because I really didn't know what kind of interest there was in this movie.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, the fact that you were thinking mid-30s, we're not even really close.
No, not even near it came in at $56 million, with a just under 15,000 per screen average. I mean, it's still a ways off. Budget was at 170, but it's considered a surprising hit. Like, it exceeded expectations, because I think the studio would have been happy with a 40 to 50 million in that range, and it did 56.
It did 56 despite some kind of negative reviews. I mean, it got off to a very strong start Friday.
I didn't see a lot of negative reviews. I think it has a decently positive word of mouth.
I think Rotten Tomatoes score, when I looked, I think it was like 63%, which isn't terrible.
That's about what I assume, because I don't read reviews really. I just kind of, I check forums and stuff and kind of see what people are saying. And this one, it seemed like the consensus is, it's all right. Like, it was worth watching.
Right.
Like, that, it just seems like, oh, that's good.
That's about kind of what I think we thought both.
That's exactly what I thought it would be. That's why I didn't think $56 million. But, it unseated Men in Black 3.
Men in Black as well.
Yes, Men in Black also, again, had a 48% drop for number 2 to $28 million. It's already over $100 million forever. But
so are they halfway home?
About halfway home towards the it's a reported budget of $225 million.
Which, you know, is more than that.
I've heard it's closer to $300 million or $350 million. Yeah. So I don't see that movie making its money back. Number 3, The Avengers, finally starting to fall a little bit. It's down to 44% drop, which I believe that's one of the largest it's had. It's consistently dropping. But it passed Dark Knight for third all-time.
The significant thing about
U.S.
that
box office, and it passed Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 for third. It's right there. I think one report said it passed it for third internationally, and the other one said it's still
next
fourth.
Week. It definitely will.
Within the week, it'll go, because it'll still probably pull in another, you know, $15 million next week. Then Battleship and the Dictator 4 and 5, pretty much how it's been. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. It's a movie nobody's heard of. It's doing very well. It actually jumped up from 8 to 6, and it's been in wide release for 5 weeks, or it's been out for 5 weeks now. So that keeps surprising. Going on to limited release, some of the movies we talked about in our summer movie preview, High School, starring Adrian Brody, pretty low, $80,000 on 200 screens. That's a $403 average per screen. And then Battlefield America, the dance movie that I don't know who it's for, at 188 screens at just over 113,000. So that's a $600 average per screen. Then in the other wide release, fared a little better, an average of $2,119 on 86 screens, $182,237. A movie we both saw this week, Piranha 3DD. Now, I want you, Ryan, my co-host, to start with your opinion of this movie, because I'm pretty sure it's incorrect.
Dave, my co-host, let me start off. Let me begin at the beginning, if I could. I am not someone that's going to stand on the rooftops and shout how great Piranha 3D was, because it wasn't that good.
Never said it was great. I said it was exactly what it needed to be.
It was what it needed to be. I mean, I thought the special effects, the makeup effects were good. Nicotero is awesome, probably the best in the business right now, and he did a hell of a job. With that being said, did I think it was particularly funny? No. It was campy at times, and there were other times where it was just kind of an okay monster type movie. To me, Piranha 3D came off as a Saturday Night Sci-Fi Channel movie that they actually spent some time and money on. So I don't think it was that good. It's not, you know, the top five genre movies ever.
I never said it was.
Oh, no, I know, but
you're talking to me like I said all this stuff.
No. What I'm trying to say is the veneration that I'm about to put forward for Piranha 3DD. I mean, comparing apples to apples, I didn't like Piranha 3D. And I liked 3DD better.
But weren't drawn to the cast. You weren't drawn to Elizabeth Shue, Adam Scott, Ving Rhames.
I like all of those
Jerry
people.
Jerry O'Connell, like, they didn't add anything to you.
I thought O'Connell was really good. Elizabeth Shue, I like her. I didn't think she really added that much to that movie. I do like Adam Scott. I don't like the Adam Scott that I got in Piranha. I thought
the creativity with the kills, the death scenes, that doesn't add anything to you. Alexander Aja's like eye for legit horror and then mixing it with camp and combining the two, like, that did nothing for you?
No, I didn't think he mixed it with that much camp. I thought there were times, Jerry O'Connell's death, yeah, there was camp in
that.
The
chick with the hair and the motorboat?
Did I think it was that clever? No, I just didn't. I didn't think it was that good. I didn't have that great of a time watching it. It just, to me, it wasn't that good. But with Piranha 3D, I knew, or 3DD, yeah. With Double D, I think they knew exactly what kind of a movie they were going to make. And I think that they decided, all right, we're going to take everything we did on the first one, and we're just going to turn the dial to 11, so to speak.
See, and that's true, but that's not a wide-release movie to me.
Maybe
it's
not.
And that's why it's not going in. The first one was in wide-release. It did well. So it did well enough to greenlight a sequel. So then you have these guys coming. To be honest, John Gulager and that screenwriting team, they essentially make sci-fi movies. They make stuff that are made for chiller on a Saturday night. Like, yeah. They're not... Their movies should not be wasting big screens. Like, put movies on the big screen that deserve to be there, not movies from these garbage people.
I didn't really think that Piranha needed to be on the big screen. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say, is that I thought both movies were bad. But I thought, at least with Piranha 3D, Double D, that, okay, this is what we're going to give you. We're going to promise you X, and we're going to deliver on X. It's going to be way over the top. There's going to be a bunch of boobs. There's going to be a lot of gore. And then we're going to have, I thought the cameos in Double D were better.
No. Ving Rhames and Paul Scheer just wasted their day showing up for that.
Well, I wasn't even talking necessarily about those two. I was thinking Busey and Hasselhoff.
Here's the biggest difference between the two movies. Piranha 3D was campy and it was fun, but it was self-aware enough, and it was kind of like nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
I don't,
like,
even think that it was.
I do.
I don't think it was self-aware at all. I think they were like, okay, we're going to kind of be earnest with this.
That's exactly what
I got. But you can't say, all right, we're going to actually make like a legitimate kind of a scary movie and be kind of self-aware at the same time. I mean, I think you kind of have to pick your spot. You could either make a genre movie,
which they did. I thought they balanced it well. to compare these movies, Piranha 3D is the friend that makes a subtle joke and just kind of winks to make sure you got it, but doesn't bring attention to it. 3DD is the friend that makes the most obvious joke there is that's not even funny, and it's fucking hitting your arm and pushing you, be like, dude, did you see that? Did you see how fucking funny I am? Did you? Wasn't that fucking great? That's what 3DD was. It was fucking awful. I honestly, it's the worst movie I've seen this year, and I went in with low expectations. And it's not that I don't have a sense of humor, because I do. Like, I love comedies. I love a well-done comedy. This wasn't. Fucking Koechner, who I love, the worst character, like, the biggest cliche ever. There was no effort put into his character. Not really, zero effort. Fucking loose ends, Katrina Bowden, so hot, and her character just disappears along with the other guy. Like, there's no closure to them. Like, they both live, and they just disappear.
If we really want to start talking about was there no closure, there was no closure to Paul Scheer's character in the first one because they forgot to put it in the movie.
They filmed his death scene and forgot to put it.
So don't even tell me, well, there's no closure. That's why he had to show up, because they just forgot about him.
The Ving Rhames Paul Scheer cameo was just fucking stupid.
It was kind of dumb, but they had to do it with Paul Scheer. They had to. What I'm trying to say is, I don't think, if we're going to compare Double D to D, I don't think the difference between the two is as large as a lot of people are making it out to be. I don't think either movie's that good. I really don't.
I think 3D can hold its own. You put it in a wide release, you give it to broad audiences, I think it can do okay. 3DD is the direct-to-DVD sequel to that people don't even give a fuck about.
When D came out, everybody thought, man, this is going to be god-awful. Went in with the absolute lowest of expectations, and they were pleasantly surprised that, all right, this wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen.
I went into this movie with the lowest expectations, and I couldn't even meet them. It was a thousand times. I said on the record this movie was going to be awful.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't expect to be fucking this angry about how goddamn fucking awful it was.
You may have had low expectations, but I think you went in with predisposed to not liking the movie.
It was bad.
Just so we don't spend the entire episode.
I totally could.
Yeah, I know. And I don't think, I'm not going to convince you that it's good. I'm not trying to. I'm merely trying to tell people, if you really love Piranha 3D, you're probably not going to like Double D. But if you didn't give a shit about the first one, you probably, like myself, you'll probably be just fine. I watched them back to back, which I don't suggest anyone does. That's entirely too much of your life to give to Piranha. I've got the time at this point. Long story short, Piranha 3DD is not that great of a movie. If you get anything from this podcast, I'm sure, just take that away. You'd mentioned a little bit the per screen average on Piranha was it $2,000 or something
like that? Yeah, about $2,000.
$2,000. We just had a box office record set last week, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, and that was Moonrise Kingdom. The per screen average for Moonrise Kingdom, now granted it was only in four cities, per screen average, $167,250 per screen. Just to give you like kind of something to compare it to, Men in Black was the big release that week, the same week Moonrise Kingdom came out. Men in Black 3 per screen average was respectable because it was in every screen in America, $16,400. That number for Moonrise Kingdom, the biggest per screen average for any indie movie ever.
For a live action movie. I said last week it was the biggest for any movie. Biggest for live action. But just to, it carried over into the second weekend too, because it only expanded. I think I complained about the release schedule, how it's just so staggered and so silly. But second weekend, it only expanded 12 theaters, so it's in 16 now. Still brought in a $54,805 per screen average. You compare that to Snow White and the Huntsman, that's pretty much considered
A success this weekend,
$14,900 per screen. So, four times that?
Yeah, I think it, I guess, you know, you can complain about the way they're releasing it, because we want to see it, that's why we're complaining, but they picked the right cities, clearly, to open up in.
It just, if it's performing this strong, what's it do on a wide release? Or is doing it so limited, is that making people...
I think it's building buzz.
Like, if it were released in Cleveland and not in Youngstown, would we feel the need to drive to Cleveland just to see it because we don't know if it's coming here?
Well, you and I both would. And, I mean, I think they kind of know that, you know, the more...
It's just interesting to me that if it's doing so well, like, how could this have done on a... Could this have challenged Men in Black 3?
No, I don't think so. Not wide release. Not a chance in hell. I think on a wide release, the numbers across the board would have been less impressive, and we'd have just been like, oh, this movie kind of underperformed. But now, because they did it in such a limited release, we're not talking about that at all. We're saying, holy shit, look at how much money this movie is making. It must be incredible. And I'm sure it probably is good. But I think that it's absolutely a conscientious decision on the part of the distribution to build some buzz about this movie so that when it does come into a city, it's got the distinction of being, for a live action movie, the largest per screen average ever. I think that does come with sort of a level of anticipation, and I think that'll be good for it when it does come to cities where, you know, like maybe Cleveland, that don't necessarily have the indie cred as some of the other cities that it's already opened in. One movie that has $0 in a per screen average, and it doesn't look like it's going to have any for a while. Reshoots coupled with bad test screenings duke it out to cause the G.I. Joe roadblock. Now, did you see what I did with that?
Yeah, I did, and I was trying not to pay. See, you just pulled a Piranha 3DD. No, like, we brought it up last week where they pulled G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yeah, rescheduling.
It was supposed to be released on June 29th. They yanked it to March, and the excuse was for 3D conversion.
Which is still happening.
I think I called bullshit last week and said there's something more to it. Well, apparently there's a lot more to it. Apparently, spoiler alert, they kill Channing Tatum very early in the movie.
Like in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and test audiences, when they saw it, liked the brief on-screen chemistry that Tatum had with The Rock.
But can I ask this? Why in the blue hell would they kill Channing Tatum off in the first place?
You know what happened? You know, here's exactly what happened. They let Steven Sommers make G.I. Joe. And they were just kind of like, whatever. Put the name on it. Name the characters, the character names.
Right.
And just make a movie. Because that first movie had nothing to do with G.I. Joe other than character names. Mm-hmm. It was fucking atrocious, and G.I. Joe fans came out in droves to talk about how bad it was. Mm-hmm. So they think, the studio thinks, oh, everything about that movie was awful. They don't consider it's the screenwriter or the director. So for the sequel, they only bring back Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow, and Channing Tatum, because he was Duke.
Who you can't...
The rest of the cast, Rachel Nichols, Marlon Wayans, Joey Gordon-Levitt, Christopher Eccleston... Some really good actors not brought back. So you bring Channing Tatum back, and you kill him off to make the fanboys happy because they hated him in the first one, when in reality, they hated the first movie because it was a pile of shit.
Right, I was going to say, they didn't hate... I mean, they might have hated Channing Tatum at that point, but they didn't hate his character.
So yeah, they killed Channing Tatum off, and test audiences were like, that's why.
Why did you do that?
And another thing was... apparently, I think they're reaching out to Joey Gordon-Levitt because they didn't consider that, oh, he's in this movie that's going to make $500 million this year.
Yeah.
So might perhaps be good we should get attached. Joey Gordon-Levitt back in this. Yeah. And it's such a disaster. So here they have to reshoot all this stuff with Channing Tatum. I guess they're still leaving. He might still die.
Yeah, but just not...
He might still get killed.
More of him. Yeah, it's going to be weird to a character that you killed to go back and wedge him into the rest of the movie.
And a character that you didn't even invite back, you're trying to fit him in there somehow.
Yeah.
With Cobra Commander, who was Joey Gordon-Levitt, by March. And convert it to 3D.
And make sure people still give a shit about the movie come March. I think that's probably going to be their biggest challenge is maybe not even... trying to make a great movie, but it's trying to, you know, build the same level of excitement, and you can't see, but I'm using air quotes, excitement that there was before, and recoup the money that they spent just basically bungling the whole thing to this point.
Yeah, because advertising was already in midway through. They paid for a Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, that's true. And there's going to be, you're going to have to pay for another Super Bowl ad for the
March release. Like, that right there is $6 million just on two ads.
Yeah.
It's
been a mess. It's been handled poorly. I think in hindsight, we could have just said, well, you know, simple enough.
I mean, we talked about Men in Black 3 filming and then stopping yeah. for like 6 or 8 months while they finish the script. This is so much worse than that.
Because of the advertising. That's yeah. what really makes this terrible.
This already had a release date. Yeah. In Hollywood, studios make release dates. They don't make movies. They make the release dates. If you can't make that, everything is thrown off.
Exactly. And that's why you see so many shit movies that get rushed out just so they can make the release date. And I think that is kind of unfortunate. You do see movies that do reshoots. That's not out of the question. But it is out of the question once they have a release date, once they start promoting it, to then say, ah, shit, you know what? We really got to go back and add in 2 movie stars to a movie.
Yeah. I just, the whole thing is hilarious to me. You got to let people make movies at some point. Like, catering to the fans. If you cater to the fans too much, you get I'm the Juggernaut bitch. I mean, you got to stand by your decisions. You made the decision that Channing Tatum can carry this franchise. And now you're going to let the fans tell you you were wrong? You made this decision. You have to stand by it. Like, yeah. You have to give it a chance. And I don't know. It's hilarious.
One dude who couldn't give a shit about what the fans think about much of anything has decided to sort of retire to his garage, which I'm sure is not like your garage or not like my garage. And the gentleman I'm speaking of is, of course, George Lucas. You might know him from movies such as American Graffiti and Red Tails. He is stepping back from his his chief role as the runner of Lucasfilm. He's being replaced by Kathleen Kennedy, who is a longtime producing partner to Steven Spielberg, who, of course, was a longtime partner with Lucas. They did the Indiana Jones movies together, and Spielberg had some fingers in some Star Wars stuff as well. And as I said before, Lucas retiring to make experimental movies, as he calls it.
As soon as I saw this headline, I knew we'd talk about it.
Why did you think that?
Well, no, because it is news. Like, you look at the headline, oh, George Lucas retiring. It looks like news. But then when you look into it, who fucking cares? Like, does it fucking matter? What's he done? Like, no. In the past 8 years, he hasn't directed shit outside of producing his producing credits. Not much. Outside of, you know, Indiana Jones a few years ago, and that was a disaster. Directing credits ended with Revenge of the Sith, and we know how those 3 went. I mean, he hasn't done much. This is the kind of thing where if you tell me Abe Vigoda died, like, it's the same kind of comparison. I'd be like, oh, I thought he died years ago. Like, oh, George Lucas is done making movies? I thought he was. Like,
why I think he's retiring to the garage, because he's never got the credit for directing that he feels, and that a lot of his
peers... Did he see the first 3, the prequels?
Well, they weren't very good, but the scripts were not that great either. That was another one where I'm not really sure. You know, he says that he makes Star Wars for kids, which, you know, you can look at Jar Jar Binks and say, yeah, maybe you're right. But then when you watch Star Wars, the prequels, and it's all about trade negotiations and, like, embargoes...
The Senate...
Yeah, kids don't, not into that. So it becomes kind of a, really, are you making it for kids or are you trying to have it both ways? But since the adults didn't like it, then you're
I'm still convinced 1 through 3 were made up as he went along. Like, that's the impression I get, that Phantom Menace came out and then 2 and 3 were just kind of made up as he went.
You're not going to get a whole hell of a lot of argument from me, although I do think Revenge of the Sith was a decent movie.
It was okay.
Yeah.
But
it was tough to bounce back.
But you make Jar Jar such a big character in the first one. Like,
yeah.
This is the same thing as Channing Tatum. Like, oh, you're putting a lot of stock in this character. This character is going to be, you know, the C-3PO of this series, the Chewbacca. Like, he's going to be that. People hate him so much, so he's barely seen the other 2 movies.
Barely seen, but... You know, if I can, like, Jar Jar does show up at the beginning of Attack of the Clones. He's not in it that much, but I think if he would have been in it, it would have been forced, because he really doesn't have a function. I mean, C-3PO didn't have a function, really, but he was there with R2-D2, who did have a function. So it was easy to figure out ways to get the droids in the movies. But, I mean, if you look, really, the crux of the entire... You can make an argument that the crux of the entire saga, all 6 movies, is Jar Jar in Revenge of the Sith when he gives all of the power to the Emperor. Jar Jar did that. And you got to, they could have had any member of the Senate do it. But George Lucas was like, nah, no, it's going to be Jar Jar. Why? Because everybody goddamn hates him. But I guess the point I was trying to make was that, it, to me, George Lucas as a director, probably he probably won't be remembered as a director. I mean, really, of all the original Star Wars movies, he only directed A New Hope. And that was it. And it was
arguably a good movie. The weakest of the three.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't even think it's close. Jedi was not very good. But the best, Irving Kirshner directed Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. And that's kind of...
He also RoboCop 2.
Yeah. Kind of widely accepted as being probably the best, especially of people of our generation, the best Star Wars movie. And obviously, with him not directing it, that does kind of look a little strange. But to me, Lucas will be most remembered for the things that he brought to cinema. And, you know, we wouldn't have Avatar if there was no George Lucas. You know, Industrial Light and Magic, we wouldn't have a lot of the special effects that we have now. We wouldn't have Pixar if it wasn't for George Lucas. There are a lot of things that, through making Star Wars, not necessarily directing, but by creating it, by conceptualizing it, and trying to put it on the screen, we got a lot of things. And I think that cinema without George Lucas not making, you know, three more Star Wars movies, there's going to be a technological lag that we're not going to get that, you know, had he decided or been mandated from Fox that he makes 7, 8, and 9, you know, that's going to be stuff that I don't know if we're going to have to wait on James Cameron to invent or somebody else, but...
I think Kathleen
Kennedy.
Kennedy, I think she's going to do great things with LucasArts. Her first five movies, E.T., Poltergeist, Twilight Zone the movie, Temple of Doom, Gremlins... then there was Fandango. We'll forget that. After that, Goonies, Back to the Future, Young Sherlock Holmes, Color Purple. Like, she's... Her resume...
She's been involved in some good stuff, yeah.
Batteries not included.
She's been involved in some good stuff.
Yeah, I think she'll be... I think it's... The significance of the story, I think, is that... I hate to play this card, but that a woman is taking over such a large production company.
Kind of another passing of the torch, you might say, from Marky Mark to Billy Madison. Adam Sandler replaces Mark Wahlberg in Three Mississippi with Will Ferrell.
Tried to trip you up with that.
Yeah, you did. I mean, it was the way it's written is not bad. Well, I guess it is kind of sad.
It doesn't make any sense. I was trying to out Ryan E.B. No, Adam Sandler is, after other guys, Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, which a lot of people seem split on the other guys. I thought it was funny. I thought Wahlberg and
Will... I liked it.
I thought Wahlberg and Ferrell were, like, really good together. I like Mark Wahlberg in that kind of role where... Like, I like him in a comedic role because you don't expect it from him. So after that, they wanted to do this movie called Three Mississippi, which is just about two rival families...
Your football game.
...that play a yearly Thanksgiving football game. It was going to be directed by Adam McKay, who did Other Guys... But then schedules, real life get in the way, and they just haven't been able to happen. Then Battleship bombs, and the studio that did Battleship wants to make Lone Star. They want Mark Wahlberg, that to be his next movie. So if they were to do this movie with Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, it'll be over a year before they can do it. So they want to push through and get it made, so Adam Sandler jumps in, which seems like an odd replacement to Mark Wahlberg, because here you have a guy who's not known for comedy... bouncing off of Will Ferrell.
And is sort of understated when he does it.
And then replaced with...
The polar opposite.
The opposite of that. But it's also the first time that...
Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler are
the
really
two... I'm not looking at numbers. Probably the two most successful SNL alums from comedies. Not counting like Eddie Murphy or...
Yeah.
Like the two most...
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Some of those guys.
The ones, the modern day ones, the ones that people think of now when you think of SNL, and it's first time they're pairing up together.
Steve Martin,
yeah. So forget I said that. But so I mean, they lose. Adam McKay also doesn't get a chance to direct it now. So Sean Anders, who wrote Hot Tub Time Machine, I thought was great.
It wasn't bad.
He's directing That's My Boy, the upcoming Adam.
Yeah, we'll have to see on that one.
But then he also directed Sex Drive.
Which I didn't see. That was the one with Cyclops, right?
Yeah, it was great. I hate these teenage sex comedies. This one was really, really good. Like, Sex Drive was actually fantastic. I highly suggest watching it. But it's just Alec Baldwin's on to play. It would have been Wahlberg's dad. Now he'll be Adam Sandler's dad. Rob Riggle, you have to get him.
He's a big dude.
Yeah, and then they're trying to get Jeremy Renner as well. It's just, it could be a fun premise. It could be a cool premise, and it'll be weird to see Ferrell and Sandler kind of go head to head in more ways than one. Because where's the middle ground?
Yeah,
they're both so high up from level ground that. That's why Wahlberg and Ferrell worked so well.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you have to have...
Mark Wahlberg was the common guy. Yeah. He was the viewer in that situation. And
if you have, you know, a comedic duo, you generally have a straight guy. And I can't imagine who is going to be the straight guy. Maybe it'd have to be Ferrell. I mean, if they're going to do it that way,
You know what? I think Will Ferrell can pull a great straight guy. Yeah. He's a great actor. But I think Sandler can do it better.
Really?
Yeah, Punch Drunk Love.
It was good, like, yeah.
When underrated, the night they promoted it as a 9/11 movie, so nobody saw it, Rain Over Me, that Mike Binder movie. That was promoted as a 9/11 movie. It really wasn't. Sandler was fantastic in that, and he was so, like, somber. He wasn't even just, like, he was so good. That I think he could be a good straight guy. Whether he wants to, I don't know. Can he watch Will Ferrell go nuts and him kind of...
And stay... yeah, we'll have to see. I mean,
the only thing I can think of, this is 80s Eddie Murphy starring with early 80s Richard Pryor.
Oh, good God. Yeah.
Like, they're so similar.
You're right. They're the same. Spastic.
Yeah. They're the same kind of comedy that just, how do they work together?
Well, we will have to wait on
I do want to see it, though. I'm less excited now with Sandler involved.
Let's wait for a trailer.
Yeah, I still want to see it.
Yeah. One movie that I think we're both probably going to want to see, judging by Dave's reaction on an audio podcast, he wants to see it as well. And that's...
Nicholas Winding Refn.
You know what? I'm just going to call him Nicky Winding because I like it. He's the guy that directs all of the movies that we talk about every week. Drive. We talk about that movie every week.
Valhalla Rising.
Yeah, and actually, I can already see that we're going to have at least one Drive reference in about, cue it up, 30 seconds. He's directing The Button Man, which I have to admit, didn't really know a whole hell of a lot about.
Well, Button Man is from the DC Comics, I forget the name, something 2000. But it's from, I think his guy...
Power Man 2000.
No, I should have put more detail in the
Death
outline.
Death Race 2000.
Anson Anthony, I think is the name. It's the same guy that created Lord Judge Dredd. But Nicholas Winding Refn's on. The plot of the movie is that there's this group of millionaires that all play a game where they just hire hitmen to kill each other.
Sounds like a fun game.
Until one man, the Button Man, gets involved and decides, yeah, I'm going to put an end to all this. So I imagine in my head... Ryan Gosling gets involved and says, I'm going to kill everybody.
You don't think he could play a millionaire? That's typecasting.
Because, they work together on Drive. They're currently working on Only God Forgives, which there are screen captures out there of just Gosling just bloodied. So you can tell it's going to be
a 90-minute elevator
scene.
It's going
to be a violent, violent movie. And then they're also going to work together on the Logan's Run remake. Which is funny because the guy that created Button Man and Judge Dredd adapted Logan's Run to comic book form in the late 70s. So this plot sets up for exactly like a Nicholas Winding Refn movie where it's character-driven, violent, ultra-violent. He can make it stylized.
But there's going to have to be dialogue, right? You would think.
Button Man don't need to talk to nobody.
Button Man don't, but don't the people that hire Button Man have to tell him? Or are they just going to like draw a picture?
No, everybody else talks. Gosling doesn't. I think he's paying Gosling per word.
Maybe, because he sure shit didn't say anything in Drive. Nobody said anything in Valhalla Rising.
But they're good. But did you ever lose interest in either movie?
No, I'm not. I told you, I like the guy's work. I think he's awesome. I just can't understand how he keeps making movies and nobody says anything.
But then you have Bronson, which is the exact opposite, where Tom Hardy doesn't stop talking.
Yeah.
God.
Maybe that's it. Maybe
even, you know what? Even if Tom Hardy's Button Man, either one of those, you know what? Gosling can play a millionaire. Tom Hardy.
And maybe we'll get that. Maybe because it doesn't. Does it say specifically Gosling was cast as?
Oh no, I'm projecting. You're just, that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe there is a big where Hardy's going to play a millionaire, Gosling's going to play a millionaire, and Joel Edgerton is going to be the button man. Or no, wait, and Fassbender's going to play a millionaire too, and then we can probably just like.
I would never
Have to watch another movie again.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you never left the theater after seeing Button Man, you would never get to see Magic Mike. But Magic Mike will be out long before Button Man.
He'll be jerking off for a long time to wait for Button Man.
Oh, yeah. Mike. Yeah. And you know what? And I keep calling it, when we were talking, I called it the new trailer for Magic Mike. It's really not a trailer.
It kind of is.
It is.
It starts off as a clip and then turns into a trailer.
It's sexy television, though.
It's weird. Magic Mike is the movie coming up this summer. I forget the date, 22nd or 29th of June. It's basically Channing Tatum's life story.
Yeah, it's a semi-autobiographical. It's about C. Tate's as a stripper.
Steven Soderbergh was so interested in the fact that Channing Tatum came from being a stripper to a big-time movie star that Soderbergh wanted to make a movie about.
He wasn't as interested in Diablo Cody being a stripper and writing movies.
Yeah, and winning an Oscar. I think it's just
Steven Soderbergh likes to see C. Tate's with his shirt off.
Yeah, it's basically Channing Tatum is a stripper, Matthew McConaughey is a stripper, Alex Pettifer is a stripper, Matt Bomer is a stripper, Handsome Men is strippers.
Big Daddy Cool.
Yeah, what's the movie about?
strippers? I think it's about strippers.
See, the first trailer was very romantic comedy.
It looked like it looked like a romantic comedy. Oh, how is this girl with a boy's name going to be able to deal with C. Tate's showing his taint to all these chicks?
And then the second clip / trailer shows that girl's not even in.
No, they were just like, fuck it.
So I don't know what to expect from this movie. But it's Soderbergh. Like, that's the only thing that has me. Like, I like C. Tate's enough, but it's Soderbergh, and I trust him enough, usually.
I think it'll be interesting to see the ratio of how much of this movie is they're really just playing to the base. Middle-aged women that want to see all these guys with, and, you know, God bless him, because, you know, why, that sounds like a pretty winning formula. It's a bunch of attractive dudes with their shirts off. That's, if you want to make some money, that sounds like a good way to do it. I don't fault him for doing it. I just don't think that, there's going to be a whole lot, you know, for guys to see, and I don't think they give a shit.
Olivia Munn, I'm not into her, but she's in it. Doesn't do
anything for me.
The girl from The Good Doctor that Orlando Bloom poisons, she's in it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't think they're stripping, though.
No, definitely not. But at least one thing you can say, that after watching these two clips that we talked about, you have a pretty good idea of what's going to be in the movie. One movie that I complained about the trailer for having no idea of anything that was going to be in the movie was Red Lights. And clearly, the producers of that movie are big fans of Movies on Up, because they've just released a trailer that actually is a trailer and tells you something about the plot and shows some characters that are not just played by Bobby De Niro.
Yeah, they basically put together this trailer to show this is a run-of-the-mill paranormal thriller that looks like a million other movies you've seen that, despite the good cast, is probably going to be garbage because this looks like there's nothing unique about it.
It might not be good. I'll go so far as to say it probably won't be any good. And I don't care. I'm not invested in it.
I love the cast, though.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Olsen.
Killian Murphy, Sigourney Weaver, and Robert De Niro. It does have a good cast. I think the idea is kind of interesting, where Killian Murphy is essentially, his job is to investigate people that say that they have paranormal abilities, psychic abilities, and turns out most of the time he's right and they are fakes. But it seems from the trailer that De Niro is not a fake, and he's kind of pissed that Killian Murphy keeps wanting to investigate him and tries to F him up.
See, I like that premise. I didn't gather that because I was only half paying attention.
I've seen the trailer a couple times.
But I like that premise. Whether they can pull it off, I don't know. It looked ordinary.
Right. I just felt like it was important to talk about it.
Because we did trash
the other. Yeah, I bitched about the trailer for sucking and not showing anything. This one does show stuff, so at least you can have an idea of what's going on. So maybe check that out. The next trailer we're going to talk about briefly, I think you don't even have to see a trailer for it. Most people wouldn't, because the work's been around for a long time and plenty of adaptations. There's a trailer out for the new version of Les Mis with Jackman, Anne Hathaway, you know, a bunch of people.
I'll tell you what, during watching this trailer, I was the most miserable I've ever been.
Really?
No. But it was bad. I don't like musicals. I especially don't like these kind of musicals. Like, I don't... If I'm going to tolerate a musical, it needs to be one of the fun ones. Like I don't
Rent?
Think... No, that's AIDS-y.
Yeah, really AIDS-y.
Like Music Man.
Oh.
Like, something stupid like that. But I don't like musicals, so it doesn't matter. But I don't know what Les Mis is. I'm assuming people die. I'm assuming Anne Hathaway gets her hair cut.
Because like, that was in the trailer.
Yeah, that's really all I know about it. So I don't really care.
You know what? I don't.
And this minute and a half of Anne Hathaway singing with a bunch of depressing imagery underneath it really didn't do anything to change my mind.
I don't want to be the guy that is sticking up for Les Mis because I've never seen it. I'll say this, that, I mean, in terms of a musical, it looked all right. I mean, I think the people that are in it...
It's very sweeping. Like, it's not... It doesn't look like a musical like a Chicago or a Moulin Rouge, where
right.
it's made on set pieces like we talked about.
Yeah,
Great
and that's
Gatsby.
What I was going to bring up, is Great Gatsby isn't a musical, and if you watch that
yeah.
trailer, that looks like a musical, but the one for Les Mis, it looks like a movie where people
yes,
sing.
It doesn't look like a stage show adapted to a big screen.
Exactly.
I'll see your point there. It just looks like a real world.
Yeah, and I think the people are in it are good, so what the hell? I mean, if I'm going to see a version of Les Mis, I'll say this will probably be it, but that's still
a
pretty big look.
Amanda Seyfried follows up Mamma Mia.
Yeah, because...
The movie that made her a star and led her to make 5 or 6 terrible movies.
That one with her and Liam Neeson and Julianne Moore. Jesus. That made her, or parts of her, a star.
That movie was good. Chloe, was it?
Yeah, Chloe. That was streaming on Netflix. Check that out if you're a big fan of her breasts. I'm relatively sure you won't see any breasts in Premium Rush, nor will you see me in that movie, because I am not going to see it. This is the Bike Messenger movie that has a Bike Messenger trailer that has come out. And I don't know. What do you want to say about that?
Here's where I'm confused about this movie. Joey Gordon-Levitt makes... good movies. Like, he made, even I didn't like Brick. I respect Brick because that's the kind of movie, like, I like when actors make movies like that because it's something different. Joey Gordon-Levitt, outside of G.I. Joe, has avoided making these just throwaway blockbusters. Like, these throwaway action movies. He's always, like, Hesher.
The stuff he's in is interesting.
He makes movies like Hesher. And that's the only thing that, kind of gets me somewhat interested because. He does make great choices.
Yeah.
This doesn't look like one.
No.
But then Michael Shannon's also in it, who is a fantastic actor. I'm so confused by this, because the trailer is playing up the Bike Messenger big time. Like, it's a bike-heavy trailer. But I wonder if there's more to it, and they're just promoting it like that.
I think there may be some... maybe some more to it, but I have to imagine that a lot of the action is going to take place on the streets of Manhattan in terms of a bicycle chase. And I don't know, maybe it'll be really good. I just, I'm not going to rush out and see it, despite the fact that it is Joey. Usually his stuff we do, you know, try and go see.
Because he's got Looper coming out shortly after that, which Looper's going to be fantastic. And then you got... This is his fault. This is what's coming out within a month of Dark Knight.
Post Dark Knight, pre Looper, yeah. But
so,
he is at a point where he can do shit like that.
Oh, he absolutely
and
can.
And you'll go see his next movie because whatever. Like, his batting average is still pretty good.
That I talk him up. I hate a lot of his movies, but he makes interesting decisions. Like,
yeah.
I hated Brick. I hate 500 Days. Like, I hate some of his movies, but he always does something different, which. This looks...
Yeah. It looks different. I can't think of another... Well, there was that Kevin Bacon.
Quicksilver.
Yeah, never mind.
Breaking Away. BMX Bandits.
Rad. Which, I mean, wasn't a bicycle messenger movie, but it was good. It was pretty rad. One movie that I think Dave thinks is going to be pretty rad is Perks of Being a Wallflower. That's the new movie with Hermione.
What did I say that was going to be good?
I don't know.
It does look kind
of
like something.
You put it on the thing, and it's just like, it stinks of a Dave movie.
Well, it does look something like, I haven't read the book. I honestly don't know what the book's about.
Probably being a wallflower and what perks that
But
provide
watching the trailer, like, Hermione looks all right. It's got Paul Rudd in it. It's got Logan Lerman, who shouldn't be doing Perks of a Wallflower. Should be Peter Parker in the Spider-Man movie, and them not casting him was the first mistake that movie made. But I'm kind of torn on this movie. I don't know yet. I haven't seen enough. I don't know enough about the source material. It looks charming enough. Like, I think Lerman can carry a movie. I think Hermione's, I think she's going to have the best career of the main Harry Potter characters post-Harry Potter. And, like, Paul Rudd, I'm assuming his role is similar to Zooey Deschanel in Bridge to Terabithia.
I really couldn't tell you. I don't think it's going to necessarily be a Paul Rudd vehicle as a fan of the Ruddster.
I don't need a lot of Rudd.
Well, no, but I don't think that... I'm not anticipating him being in it enough for me to think, all right, well, let me take a chance on this because of him. I think that this is perhaps a movie that we are outside of the age demographic for. I think we're probably a little old.
I have a lot of friends that love that book. I think there's more to it than, based on what I've heard people say about the book, I think the trailer might be a little misleading.
Maybe, but that's at this point, you know, that's really all the two of us have to go on.
The trailer gave me the feel of it's kind of a funny story. The Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. I'm just trying to
minus the it has
the
looks
crazy
like,
parts.
Yeah, minus the insane asylum part. Like yeah. It feels like it has that kind of tone to it, where it's just Logan Lerman's character doesn't really know what's going on. He's trying to figure it out. So
we're trying to figure out really what's going on.
I'll see it.
In it too. Well, yeah, okay, you'll see it begrudgingly. This next movie, I'm sure a lot of people are going to go see, just because of who's in it. And I think it's probably the right demo too. The next movie from young Jennifer Lawrence was already actually made before she ever did anything
this
with
Hunger
Games.
It's been in the can for a while.
House at the End of the Street. It is kind of the way it has been described is it is what Disturbia was to Rear Window. This movie is to Psycho, which is kind of a lofty thing to say about a movie comparing it to Psycho.
I guess Elizabeth Shue plays her mom, which that's a family reunion I want to go to. Elizabeth Shue and Jennifer Lawrence. But I guess the whole thing, they move into a house, and next door years ago, somebody killed the family.
And this little girl killed her parents.
And
then
they was only
drowned.
Survived by the brother,
yeah.
Who Jennifer Lawrence,
of course,
friends.
Is going to make out with.
What's interesting, though, is the second trailer shows a lot more about the plot. The first trailer for this dropped in, it's been months. The first trailer came out before Hunger Games did, and it's done backwards.
Yeah.
It's unique, it's an interesting trailer, and that actually was more intriguing to me than this one that showed a lot more.
This one just seemed like a straight-out movie that...
pretty much say what I said about Red Lights. It seemed...
Yeah,
it's probably
kind of cookie-cutter.
Where it just looks like, oh, I've seen this a million times.
Yeah.
The first one was at least unique, where it's done backwards, but I'll see it just because of J-Law and the Shoe Lady. That's my nickname for her.
Yeah, it took me a half a second, and then I thought, her name is Shoe. Yeah, so jury's out on this one. The next one, the jury's been out for me on these guys for quite a while. It is The Baby Makers, and that is the new one from the comedy team of Broken Lizard.
Not technically? It's not a Broken Lizard movie.
Because there's not enough of them?
It's directed by J. Chandler Nileskar, who does direct the Broken Lizard movies.
Yes.
And he's in it.
And Rod Farva's
in it. And I think Eric Stolstrom or whatever, I forget his last name. There's three or four of them in it, but it's not a
quorum of Broken Lizard.
It stars Paul Schneider and Olivia Munn, but the plot of this movie is Paul Schneider can't have kids, his sperm is no good, but him and Olivia Munn want to have babies. When he was younger, he donated a lot of sperm to the sperm bank, and he wants it back. They won't give it to him, so they come up with this plot to break into the sperm bank and steal his sperm.
Fucked up premise, which is why Dave's got a grin on his face.
I think it looks hilarious. I'm not sold on Paul Schneider as a leading man. Like, I like him enough. He was good in Lars and the Real Girl, but he was secondary to the Gosling. He was the weakest part of all the Real Girls, which is one of David Gordon Green's early movies with Zooey Deschanel. I don't know about him as... But I also never watched a lot of Parks and Rec, which he was on the... He's done comedy that I just haven't seen. But the trailer, I think it looks funny. I think there's a lot of good laughs in the trailer.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried. I mean,
the only thing that worries me, this movie's been done for a long time.
Yeah, and if it sits on the shelf, there's generally a reason why they don't leave, you know, $100 million movies
but
on the shelf.
It can't be worse than Slammin' Salmon.
You know what? That's the one I stopped at, because shit. Like,
that was the last one.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That was a good stopping point.
Yeah, I sat through... Puddle Cruiser was actually before. They made that before.
Puddle Cruiser was the first one.
Yeah,
that
came
was
out,
before Super Troopers.
It got a release later. But yeah, I like Super Troopers. I thought that was really good.
Don't you dare. Don't you fucking dare badmouth Club Dread.
I was going to say Club Dread was okay. I was cool with that.
I love
Beerfest. Didn't really care for.
Did you just watch it once?
Beerfest? No, I actually have seen it a couple times.
To me, it didn't hit me the first time. Second time, love that movie. I'll watch Beerfest anytime it's on now.
Well, that's where the two of us are really going to take diverging paths on Broken Lizard, because
Slam and Salmon, though, I barely made... Olivia Munn was in that, too. It's Olivia Munn heavy.
I guess so.
That's why we're all in bad
news. It's Olivia Monday.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
We record on Mondays with an MLM.
That's why, I was listening to episodes a couple weeks ago, and it's like, man, I'm really positive. Like, it just seemed like during the summer movie preview, I was like, oh, I can't wait to see that. It's like, I'm generally not that positive about movies. Is this whole podcast just me talking about how great movies are? I think I'm kind of putting that away today.
Probably. I don't know. I kind of feel maybe like I'm being overly negative about things, but the hell with it.
I feel I'm being accurate.
Fair and balanced. That's what we're going for on this one. A movie that we are absolutely not at all going to be balanced on, we are both way thumbs up on, is a movie called Branded. And it looks a bit like John Carpenter's classic. I'll call it a classic. It's a movie he doesn't get a whole lot of credit for. They Live, as a Roddy Piper vehicle, and that would scare a lot of people off. But
They Live was a good movie. I don't see the comparison here.
You don't?
No.
Where aliens are, spoiler alert, aliens are controlling everything and nobody can see it except for the main character? Doesn't come across?
Basically, what are those things called? QSR codes?
Yeah.
That's basically what this movie's about.
Yeah.
This movie's about advertising with a sci-fi alien takeover spin on it. Like, it's
about consumerism.
Yeah. Instead of billboards, you have QSR codes up there, and then they're all tailored to you.
Well, not necessarily.
So I would see a trailer for a good movie. Ryan would see a trailer for Piranha 3DD, or a billboard for that. Like, it's tailored to where, and then
there's an algorithm within your brain, and the aliens have figured out how to control your brain and use it to make you susceptible to these advertising messages, whatever they may be.
And this guy catches on to it.
Right. He can actually see where there was kind of a, and I don't know how he comes by that power in this movie, but there was a device in the last movie that allowed
the glasses.
Yeah. Roddy Piper to see that, you know, aliens were controlling everything. I do think there are similarities between the two. I get pissed off when we do direct remakes of things that I like. This is very close, and you might think that I'd be pissed about it, but I think they're taking a different spin. They're adding something to it, so I do see value.
I think this is going to be, and I like the title change, because this was a Russian film. It's not, it's in English language. Mm-hmm. It was just made in Russia, originally called The Mad Cow, which I think Branded is a much better title.
Yeah.
And if you watch the trailer, there's a lot of cool stuff they do with advertising.
With the QSR codes, that's kind of like their grassroots marketing campaign. If you have your phone and you snap the QSR codes that flash in the trailers, they get you kind of like that that indie marketing thing that they've been doing.
But even in the trailer, like, it starts with a commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's billboards all over, and the title sequence at the end just says Branded. It says the title of the movie, scrolling through like
a bunch of different
50
logos
fonts
that you'll recognize.
You recognize. It's actually really cool, and I think it's the only. My only concern is this going to hit it on the head too heavy? because there's no subtlety to the trailer, really. Like, I'm sure there's a social message that this is going to take, that clearly. We're letting advertising take over us. Is it going to be subtle enough and still deliver that sci-fi goodness?
Well, and that's what we're going to have to wait to see. But I think that, you know, we're both going to give it a try. And then,
and if you've been wondering, whatever happened to Lily Sobieski?
She's been in Russia.
She's making sci-fi movies in Russia.
She's been in the gulag in Siberia. If you're ever wondering what happened to James Salas, that's the guy that wrote Drive. Well, he wrote another book. It's called Driven. And it looks like it's on the fast track to becoming a movie. Now, the last one took, I think, 6 years to go from book to the screen. I don't think this one's going to take quite as long.
It should, though.
But in case it does, the book takes place 7 years after the first Drive, so we do have time.
Yeah. I'll see it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Rain and Gosling will be back. If they're not,
I think Gosling has to be back.
One of them has to be. Yeah. I will see it if it's both of them. If it's not, definitely. Then I don't care.
We'll still see it.
It'll be a fucking direct-to-DVD sequel with Emil Hirsch as the fucking Scorpion Jacket guy.
I was thinking it'd be John Carter.
Yeah, he'll be out of work by then.
Taylor Kitsch and Olivia Munn.
It'll be Alex Pettifer.
One movie that I'm hoping will be completely Munnless. Is Kick-Ass 2, and we actually have most of our stars in various stages of talks, but they are all in talks.
It's looking like they're all going to come back, which
Aaron
is
Johnson,
huge.
Chloe Moretz, McLovin, and actually even Nicolas Cage is kind of going to come back.
I don't
to
understand
do,
that. Well, flashbacks.
Yeah.
Well, if Mark Millar has his way, the movie's going to start off with 30 minutes of Hit Girl before you even see Kick-Ass.
Which is more Hit Girl than were in kind of the later books, right?
They were less. The way he described Mark Millar, you can never take what he says seriously, but he makes it sound like, in order to do scheduling, that Chloe Moretz isn't going to be, that there's going to be like a Hit Girl storyline and a Kick-Ass storyline that don't really coincide.
That's weird.
Yeah, like, that's how I gathered it. I mean, he could just be talking out of his ass, but she's got a lot of work. She's got a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They may only have a week or two to film with her, so it might essentially be, you know, a 45, 50-minute Hit Girl movie within a 55-minute
Just like a short
Kick-Ass movie.
Arc for her.
Yeah.
Well, they all do look like they're going to be in it, which is a good thing. We were kind of worried about that before. Another sequel that has another one of their stars set to come back is Christina Applegate is signed on to be in Anchorman 2. It looks like with her TV schedule, she may not be as large in the movie as she was in the first one. Word out on the street is it's going to have a bit of a custody battle in there, so we may see just some Veronica at the beginning and then maybe not so much.
It'll probably set up the conflict for Ron.
Yeah, I would think so. And you know, I think that's an excellent place for Ron Burgundy to be at that point in his life, is in a custody battle for a baby Burgundy. This next, I don't even know how to say this, but
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, when I saw that,
I love this dude.
I thought that can't even be like a real person, but it turns out he is a real
person.
He's
huge,
and he's been in some stuff that I've seen actually, and am going to see. He was in Sherlock, the TV show over across the pond.
He's fantastic.
He's going to be in The Hobbit, and he's going to be the villain in the new Star Trek. So
he was in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, yeah.
This guy is huge. I love Benedict Cumberbatch. He joins the cast of 12 Years a Slave.
Which were...
My goodness. Fassbender, Edgefor, Brad Pitt, Paul Dano, and now the Cumberbatch. But seriously, here's Benedict Cumberbatch will go on Facebook... And he'll literally put, "Hey, everybody," and within 30 minutes has like 500 likes and like 250 comments. Like, it's just, people just flock to him at the drop of a hat. It's insane the star power this guy has.
And it's all contained solely in his name.
And talent, because he is really good. He's not a good-looking guy. He's not like an Alex Pettifer or a Kitsch. Like, he's just a fantastic actor, and I think Star Trek's going to be huge for him in the States.
Well, The Hobbit will obviously be out first then, but it's just so many characters in that movie, and unless you're playing Gandalf, which he's not, spoiler alert, or Bilbo,
which is played by Martin Freeman, who plays Watson on Sherlock.
Yeah, so I don't think that, you know, that'll be kind of the vehicle for him. Yeah, we'll have to really wait till Star Trek to see. here in the States, Benedict.
Because he's huge over there already. And Sherlock has a big following over here, but I think he's a legit movie star in the States once he's given the chance. So
he'd be like maybe like that latest Doctor that was big over in Europe, and now he's starting to get some run over here. Or maybe the latest crop of Doctors.
Oh, you're talking from Fright Night.
Yeah.
Tennant. I think he can be bigger than Tennant. I really do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, not that I watch either of those British shows. The hell with them. They're socialists.
Watch Sherlock. Sherlock's really good. And then so is a show called Luther starring Idris Elba. But that's for TV.
Ooh, Stringer Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for TV on up.
See Stringer Bell next week. Movie that we're going to... It's kind of the same. It's a similar genre. It's a sci-fi movie. No Stringer Bell, but we do have C. Tates and Mila Kunis in the Wachowski brothers, Jupiter Ascending.
The Wachowskis.
Whatever.
They're no longer brothers because one of them's a chick.
Yeah, that's right.
But this is interesting because they've disappeared. When they killed Emil Hirsch's career with Speed Racer, and they kind of disappeared. So this will be their comeback, I guess? And, I mean, you got Mila Kunis, who's riding high right now, and you got C-Tates, who's... I'm interested to see what they do with this. Apparently the script is awesome. I think it's going to be an action movie, and I think they want to do what they did with The Matrix, where they reinvent...
Slow everything down?
No, where they just... Every action movie after The Matrix was different than every action movie before Matrix. They want to do that again. They want to reinvent it.
It'd be interesting to see what they do.
Whether it'll work or not, we'll see.
Ridley Scott, apparently... We talked before about, maybe the new Blade Runner won't have Harrison Ford in it. Well, maybe he's reconsidered, and he now wants Harrison Ford to be involved in some level, and I don't think he means producer, with the Blade Runner sequel.
I don't want him in it. Just remake it. Reboot the franchise.
I could deal with a cameo. Smaller than the Nimoy cameo. A lot smaller than the Nimoy cameo in Star Trek.
I don't even know if that could be considered a cameo. No, Nimoy was huge in that movie.
Yeah, maybe. But, give me a little bit of Harrison Ford. I think it could be kind of neat. The Dead director, Howard J. Ford, is going to make a supernatural thriller Indelible next.
The only reason this headline makes it, watch The Dead. The Dead was a really good zombie movie that just came out. I think it was late 2011 or early this year. Really good movie. It takes place in, I think, South Africa. It's just a zombie movie in the desert. It's not your typical zombie fare. It was really, really good. So watch The Dead. And then watch Indelible when it comes out.
I like what you did with this one. Guy Ritchie looking for gold with a stylized take, if you can believe that, Treasure Island.
No interest. And I love Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Like, Guy Ritchie's first two movies, I love. And then Madonna ruined his career.
Yeah.
And then, like, he's finding a new life with the Sherlock movies. But I don't want it to be like, oh, we want to take this old story and modernize it.
Do it your way.
Modernize it while keeping it in the past. I just don't want Guy Ritchie to be the go-to guy when you want to stylize an old story, because he's better than that.
He is better than that. We're not really excited about it. Probably gonna take a pass on Treasure Island. Another movie that I'm definitely going to take a pass on is Sly Stallone and Bobby De Niro. They are doing a boxing movie where they're actually going to box. It's called Grudge Match.
It's a comedy. You should mention that. Rocky versus Raging Bull, if it's done well, I need to see a trailer. I'm not going to write it off right away. I want to see a trailer first.
Okay. All right. We'll write it off after the trailer. The X-Men First Class sequel and the sequel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, both got their release dates, and they will be in the summer of 2014.
I'm down for both.
Yep, get ready, nerds. 2014 is going to be awesome for you. Are we looking at Avengers that summer too?
Yes.
Okay.
No, maybe not till 15. I don't know.
Well,
I think it's 14 for right now, but
just
it'll probably
empty all your pockets.
Yeah.
Up front,
there'll be something.
No longer must you worry, must you sweat bullets, because I know you were, about what possibly could have happened with the Hunger Games. It will happen no more. Hunger Games now officially 100% John Carter free.
That doesn't mean we're in the clear, though, because Taylor Kitsch's name was brought up for Fennec, which is a major character in Catching Fire, but Robert Pattinson was rumored. He's not it. Now Taylor Kitsch says he's not it. The other two names are Armie Hammer and Garrett Hedlund, who, to be honest, all four of those actors would make an awful Fennec, so hopefully it's none of those four. Hopefully it's Ryan Kwanten from True Blood. He should be Finnick. He might be a little too old for the part, but he's perfect for it, so...
I have no idea. I mean, I know who Ryan Kwanten is, but I can't... I don't know Finnick from nothing. One thing I do know quite a bit about, and we all know now, a release date for ID4 3D. Independence Day 3D will be coming out July 3rd, 2013.
I don't care. I'm not into re-releases, not into 3D, especially not into 3D re-releases.
Early on in the process of the newest Batman film, Warner Brothers wanted the Riddler, and we thought all along that it was going to be Joey Gordon-Levitt, who I think probably could have been a hell of a Riddler.
Well, there were always those Eddie Murphy rumors, too.
Now, yeah, there was that, too. And you could add a rumor to Leo. They were actually looking at wanting DiCaprio to play the Riddler.
That's who the studio wanted, because I believe at the time he was already working on Inception with Nolan, so they wanted to use
And he's
that.
Really the only Inception alum that really didn't... Well, not the only
Ellen
one.
Page.
Yeah, she wasn't in it, but I mean... Yeah.
But I think Leo's a talented actor. I can't see him as the Riddler. But I think it's clear that once Nolan leaves, if they do reboot the Batman franchise,
that he's going to play the Riddler at some point.
I don't think Leo will play it. But I think it's I think it's clear who the villain will be in the first Batman movie post Nolan.
You don't think they'd go back to the Joker?
No.
Do you think there's ever going to be another Joker?
Yeah.
In a Batman film?
Yeah.
You know who they really, if they do another Joker, who they should absolutely get?
Crispin Glover?
No, Mark Hamill. Yeah. Did the voice of the Joker in the Batman animated series.
But he can't act. He can voice act.
Oh, you're full of shit. That's where we'll have to agree to disagree. He could be weird. And that's what the Joker needs. It needs to be weird.
As long as it's not Alex Pettifer.
Or Taylor Kitsch. Next week... We are actually free of both of those guys in theaters, I'm pretty sure, looking at things. Yeah, I think so. I think it's safe to say that. Obviously, if you've been listening to this podcast at all or have been anywhere in the world within the past couple weeks, you're familiar with Prometheus. That'll be coming out next week, as well as Madagascar 3. In limited release is Lola Versus. Again, if you're familiar with this podcast, you know a little bit about Safety Not Guaranteed. That'll
Yay.
Be out next week. And Belle Ami as well, the Edward movie that I talked a little bit about in our summer preview. Stay away from that. Also, Peace, Love, and Misunderstanding and Dark Horse. So, couple big movies that are coming out. A family movie and an Everybody Else movie. And a bunch of varied stuff in limited release.
And Prometheus, riding off some high buzz, opened to over 15 million overseas this weekend and getting a lot of good buzz. So we're going to do the over-under how you want to do it. I'm going to set the over-under here. Madagascar 3 and Prometheus.
Are we doing both of them? Wait,
and
what?
Prometheus, 55 million over-under for both of them.
I think Prometheus is going to make over $55 million. And I am going to say that Madagascar will make under.
You're crazy. They're both overs. I think
well,
Prometheus.
Really not crazy if I only just said.
I think Prometheus.
If I disagree with you on one of them.
I think Prometheus is in the 70-75 range. I truly do. I think there's so much buzz about this movie. I think Prometheus is the first thing since the Avengers people are excited about.
Yeah.
So I think it's in the 75-80 million range.
Yeah, I do
think
it's
going to
be over.
Madagascar, I think, is in the 55-60. Like. That one's not so crazy to be under, but I think they're both over.
Fair enough. So, okay, you've got it. Dave thinks over on both. We both agree that Prometheus is going to make a butt ton of money.
Yeah.
And we'll see what Madagascar does.
Because, I mean, it'll really hurt Snow White and the Huntsman, because I think third place will have, be lucky to get $20 million. But I think a bulk is going to be...
It'll be, obviously, one and two. Like a couple weeks ago, where it was kind of... We thought it would be the Avengers and Men in Black and then everything else. This was the week before Snow White. Everything else was going to suck. And it did. We were right there. So, I think that's going to happen again. And we'll have to see. Next week, we're both, if we go to the movies this week, we're going to check out Prometheus. But if we happen to be chillaxing at the crib, what is your pick of the week for Netflix or DVD or VOD?
I didn't write one down. So,
all right.
Go find The Dead. I don't know if The Dead's on Netflix Instant. You can find it on DVD probably. It's actually a really good zombie movie. It's a different, like I said earlier, it's a different take. It's definitely worth checking out.
All right, so I actually may do that. I do like me some zombie movies. I'm kind of surprised I missed that one. My pick of the week, because I actually did one, because I care about you, the listener. I'd like to be able to give you something to go watch. In light of all of this George Lucas talk, I think you should go immediately to your computer as soon as you're done with this podcast and stream The People versus George Lucas, which is a documentary one of Dave's buddies was involved with.
My buddy Jonathan is in that movie from Geekscape.net.
So another reason that you should see it, not just because I told you to.
Here's the thing. You say I don't care because I didn't write one down. Listen to an episode. I suggest like 30 movies an episode that I think you should watch. So because I don't write one single one down at the end.
Yes. All right. I think you don't care.
Fair enough.
Watch The People versus George Lucas, especially if you're someone that thinks that somehow George Lucas managed to rape your childhood and take all of your money. Which is kind of a popular thing amongst nerds. A lot of nerd rage directed at George Lucas, and this movie really kind of tries to be equal.
Yeah.
So check that out. Check out our website, which is moviesonup.com. Check out our Twitter, at moviesonup, and on the Facebook, you have to search.
You have to search moviesonup for now.
Until something happens.
Until enough people like us, and then I can get facebook.com/moviesonup.
Oh, yeah, all right. Well, like us. If you don't have a Facebook profile, you should get one.
Says the guy that doesn't have a Facebook profile.
Well, yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm the everyman. I'm letting every man know that you should probably get a Facebook.
You're the Mark Wahlberg in this relationship.
Exactly. I think so. I've got nice abs. Nah, that's a fucking lie. What isn't a lie is that we're done with this episode. It's in the can. Dave, anything you'd like to add?
Follow me at Dave Becella, or check out my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave.
Or the Steeler one.
You can find that at ericanddave.com, Eric with a K. Or the first episode of my brand new Steelers podcast, the Pod Black and Gold Cast, where I just talk about the Steelers for an hour and a half. So that's at podblackandgoldcast.com, or you can follow that on Twitter, at podblackandgold. Oh, and follow at Juggalo Jack Hanna on Twitter. Hannah with one N, because that's a really funny Twitter account. That's all I got.
Fair enough. Yeah, check out all of our podcasts. Like them all. Leave us all reviews on iTunes. Make a guess for a tagline. Everything we ask you to do every week. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.